The Bullock County Board of Commissioners held its regular meeting, covering key topics such as a presentation on development impact fees, various consent agenda items, and an extensive discussion on the future of fire services in the county. The meeting also featured public comments on fire protection, county finances, and growth-related concerns, as well as updates from officials on ongoing projects and future planning. A significant portion of the meeting was dedicated to an in-depth discussion on fire protection services and the upcoming transition of fire coverage from the city of Statesboro to Bullock County. Fire Chief Ben Tapley addressed the board to clarify misconceptions and reassure residents about the county's fire protection plans. He began by explaining the difference between automatic aid and mutual aid, noting that automatic aid involves a pre-arranged agreement where both city and county departments dispatch fire units to reported structure fires, while mutual aid is request-based assistance when additional resources are needed. Tapley reassured the commissioners and the community that the county has a solid plan in place to maintain and enhance fire services if the current agreement with the city of Statesboro covering a 5-mile fire district ends on July 1, 2025. Chief Tapley outlined Bullock County's expansion plan, which will mirror the current city fire services emergency response, which includes adding full-time firefighters, which will increase staffing to 26 full-time firefighters daily. He noted that with volunteers, Bullock Fire has 91 certified firefighters compared to the city's 69 full-time firefighters. They will open 2 engine companies and a ladder company in the 5-mile district. In addition, they will begin constructing new fire stations in underserved areas. He emphasized that Statesboro has never built a fire station in the 5-mile district, and the county is now working to fill that gap. He also addressed concerns about Insurance Services Office, ISO, ratings, acknowledging that while Statesboro holds a Class 2 rating, the county is actively investing in equipment and additional resources to improve its Class 4 quarters Y rating. Tapley said that the insurance rates will be basically the same. Some may see a small increase if they move from a ISO 2 to a 4 quarters Y, but in most cases it will be a minor increase. The meeting opened with Chairman David Bennett welcoming attendees, followed by Boy Scout Troop 337 from Brooklet leading the Pledge of Allegiance at the request of Commissioner Nick Newkirk. Boy Scout Troop 337, Brooklet. Dahl Kennedy. One of the first major agenda items was a presentation recognizing the Southeast Bullock High School Lady Jackets flag football team for their historic achievement, winning 4 consecutive Georgia High School Association, GHSA, Division I state championships. The board commended head coach Marcy Cochran and assistant coach Nick Cochran for their leadership in growing the sport of flag football in Georgia and beyond. The team's dominance was marked as an unprecedented feat, and coach Marcy Cochran was further honored for being named the 2023 Division I Flag Football Outstanding Coach at the Atlanta Falcons Football Awards Show. Southeast Bullock Flag Football Team with the Bullock County Commissioners. Dahl Kennedy. Planning and Development Director James Pope then presented an overview of development impact fees, explaining their purpose as a funding tool to ensure that new developments contribute to public safety, road improvements, and recreational facilities. Pope outlined the implementation process, which would involve hiring a consultant to conduct a methodology report at a cost of approximately $100,000, forming a steering committee, and drafting an impact fee ordinance for approval. He emphasized that impact fees must be spent within 6 years on designated infrastructure projects or refunded with interest. Commissioner Timmy Rushing inquired whether similar financial outcomes could be achieved through building permits instead of impact fees. Pope clarified that while building permits generate revenue, they only cover administrative costs for inspections, whereas impact fees provide long-term infrastructure funding. He further explained that impact fees could be collected either at the time of the building permit issuance or upon granting a certificate of occupancy. The board agreed that further discussion with an impact fee consultant was necessary before making a final decision. The consent agenda was reviewed, with 3 items moved to new business for further discussion. Approved items included minutes from the January 27th meeting, a Victims of Crime Act grant for the District Attorney's Office, hauling services for storm debris cleanup, and a special event permit for Statesboro Ducks Unlimited. One of the items pulled for discussion was the approval of TNEMEC epoxy pool paint for splash in the Boro Water Park. Aquatics manager Alex Estrada explained that the pools require repainting every 2 years due to high visitor traffic, 150,000 per summer. Changing brands would require sandblasting at an additional cost of $50,000, and Estrada assured the commissioners that performing the labor in-house would save an estimated $25,000. The board unanimously approved the purchase. Public comments focused on both impact fees and fire protection concerns. Marcus Toole, Habitat for Humanity, expressed general support for impact fees, but requested that Habitat be included in discussions to ensure that affordable housing projects are not negatively affected. Bill Emley, Brooklet resident, voiced concerns about the county terminating the fire service agreement without a clear alternative in place, warning that homeowners could see insurance premiums skyrocket if the county does not secure adequate fire coverage. Matt Hollingsworth, Home Builders Association, urged the board to ensure that impact fees are implemented fairly, questioning whether a countywide fee structure was necessary or whether fees should be district-specific. The board also received staff updates. Assistant Public Works Director Robert Siemens reported that storm debris cleanup was approximately 75% complete, with over 259,965 cubic yards of debris collected. He anticipated the final total would exceed 300,000 cubic yards. To date, crews have removed nearly 30,000 hazardous leaners and hangers, with 14,700 cubic yards of mulch hauled away. Siemens assured the board that public works staff are actively identifying and addressing remaining areas in need of cleanup and encouraged residents to report any missed locations. Finance Director Christy King reminded commissioners about the upcoming county budget retreat, tentatively scheduled for March 17 to 18 at Georgia Southern University. Interim County Manager Cindy Steinman added that Georgia Southern allows the county to use the facility free of charge, but the reservation needed to be confirmed soon. Commissioners agreed to proceed with the proposed dates. Additionally, Commissioner Nick Newkirk announced plans for a town hall meeting on February 25 from 6 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. at Louetta Moore Park, where the public will have the opportunity to discuss fire services, water issues, and other community concerns. Chairman David Bennett closed the meeting with a personal reflection, acknowledging the hard work of the commissioners and the importance of community feedback on the fire protection issue. He humorously apologized for his missing photo on the county website, explaining that it was his own oversight and not the fault of the website manager. Transitioning to a more serious tone, he reassured residents that no one will be left without fire protection when the new county system takes over. He urged the public to trust the board's decision-making process and to pray for wisdom as the commissioners navigate these difficult decisions. He reaffirmed his commitment to ensuring that all residents of Bullock County receive quality fire protection and long-term infrastructure improvements. Following these remarks, the meeting was adjourned. To view the agenda, click here. Continue scrolling for the in-depth coverage of the meeting. I. Call to order, welcome media and visitors. 2. Invocation and pledge. Commissioner Nick Newkirk invited the Boy Scout Group 337 from Brooklet to lead in the pledge. 3. Roll call. IV. Approval of general agenda. V. Presentation. 1. Southeast Bullock High School Flag Football Georgia High School Association Division 1 State Championship Proclamation Presentation. The board recognized the Southeast Bullock High School Lady Jackets Flag Football Team for their outstanding achievements. The team, led by head coach Marcy Cochran and assistant head coach Nick Cochran, was honored with a proclamation celebrating their historic accomplishment of winning 4 consecutive Georgia High School Association, GHSA, Division I state championships, an unprecedented feat in both Georgia and U.S. prep sports history, achieved within the team's first 4 years of formation. The proclamation highlighted the team's dominance in athletics, commending the coaching staff for their dedication and leadership. Coach Marcy Cochran's impact extends beyond the field, as she and Coach Nick Cochran have played pivotal roles in promoting flag football across the state, assisting other schools in developing their own programs. Coach Marcy Cochran was also recognized for her individual excellence, having been named the Division I Flag Football Outstanding Coach for 2023 at the Atlanta Falcons Football Awards Show. The board concluded the presentation by officially recognizing the Lady Jackets' latest state championship, wishing them continued success as they build on their legacy of excellence. The proclamation was sealed and signed by the board, marking a proud moment for Southeast Bullock High School and the broader Bullock County community. 2. Introduction and Overview of Development Impact Fees. Planning and Development Director James Pope provided an introductory overview of development impact fees, outlining their purpose, implementation process, and potential financial implications for the county. Pope explained that impact fees are one-time charges assessed on new developments, whether residential, commercial, or industrial, to help cover the costs of public services affected by growth, such as transportation, public safety, recreational facilities, and infrastructure. Pope emphasized that impact fees are designed to ensure new developments contribute their fair share toward the increased demand they place on county resources. These fees would apply countywide, regardless of whether a home is built in a subdivision or on rural land. He noted that while impact fees are common in rapidly growing areas, they have also been adopted in several coastal Georgia counties and municipalities, including Savannah. To implement impact fees, the county would first need to hire a consultant to conduct a comprehensive methodology report, which could cost around $100,000. This report would analyze population growth projections, infrastructure needs, and the financial impact of new developments, ultimately determining how much the county could reasonably charge per household or commercial unit. Based on this analysis, a maximum fee would be recommended, though the Board of Commissioners could choose to adopt a lower rate if desired. Pope outlined the key steps in the process, including forming a steering committee composed of 5 to 10 members, with at least 50% representing the development community to ensure fair input from stakeholders most affected by the fees. The process would also involve amending the county's comprehensive plan to include a capital improvements element, drafting an impact fee ordinance, and obtaining approval from the Georgia Department of Community Affairs before adoption. Pope highlighted that impact fees can be used for specific purposes like transportation improvements, public safety enhancements, and park development. However, they cannot be used for routine maintenance or operational costs. Additionally, any collected fees must be spent or allocated within 6 years, or they must be refunded with interest to the original payer. He noted that exemptions could be granted for projects related to economic development, job creation, or affordable housing, but the county would need to cover the cost difference for any waived fees. Pope concluded by recommending that the board consider scheduling a work session with an impact fee consultant for a more detailed discussion and to address any questions. Commissioner Timmy Rushing sought clarification regarding the application of impact fees and whether similar outcomes could be achieved through building permits. Rushing pointed out that Pope had emphasized the broad applicability of impact fees, noting that they would affect all types of developments, including mobile homes, private landowners, and subdivisions. He then asked if the same financial results could be accomplished through building permits. Pope responded that while building permits generate revenue, they are limited in scope because they are designed to cover only the administrative costs associated with inspections and related services. In contrast, impact fees are intended to offset the broader costs of growth, such as infrastructure improvements and public safety services. Pope explained that impact fees are typically collected either when a building permit is issued or, in some cases, when a certificate of occupancy is granted. The rationale behind collecting fees at the certificate of occupancy stage is that the true impact on county services begins when the property is occupied. He also noted that while impact fees might result in lower upfront costs compared to building permits, the overall revenue potential is significantly greater because impact fees are calculated based on projected service demands, growth rates, and infrastructure needs. Pope emphasized that determining the appropriate fee structure is complex and varies widely between communities, depending on factors like current service levels, population growth, and long-term infrastructure planning. Approved v. Consent Agenda. Moved 2, 4, 5 to new business. Approved 1. Minutes approval. Monday, January 27, 2025, 8:30 a.m. Approved 2. Approve a sole source from TNEMEC Company for the purchase of pool paint for Splash in the Borough Water Park. The pools at Splash in the Borough are on rotation to have its surface repainted every 2 years. This project is listed on the FY25 CIP schedule, Project IDSPLA 13. Since its inception, Splash pools have been painted using products from TNEMEC. We would need to continue to use the same product to ensure a solid bonding and coating. TNEMEC submitted a quote for this sole source purchase in the amount of $23,173. It is the recommendation of Alex Estrada, Aquatics Manager, to accept the quote from TNEMEC in the amount of $23,173. Alex Estrada, the Aquatics Manager for Splash in the Borough Water Park and Aquatic Center, presented a request related to the maintenance of the facility's concrete pools. Estrada explained that the pools require regular painting every 2 years due to the high volume of visitors, around 150,000 people each summer, which causes wear and tear. The pools were initially painted with TNEMEC, a specific type of two-part epoxy paint chosen by the original contractor for its durability and compatibility with the pool's surface. Estrada emphasized that not all epoxy paints are compatible with each other, even if they are oil-based. Using a different brand could result in issues like peeling or stripping, as there's no guarantee how the new paint would adhere to the existing TNEMEC coating. To switch to a different brand would require sandblasting the pools down to the bare concrete, a process that could cost over $50,000 based on prior estimates. For these reasons, Estrada requested approval to continue using TNEMEC paint to ensure the longevity and quality of the pool surfaces. In response to questions from the commissioners, Estrada confirmed that Splash staff handles all the labor for the painting process, which significantly reduces costs. Hiring external contractors would add an estimated $25,000 or more for labor alone. By managing the project in-house, the team ensures high-quality results while maintaining cost efficiency. The motion to approve the purchase of TNEMEC paint was passed unanimously. Approved 3. Approve the request for the Victims of Crime Act grant for the District Attorney's Office for the federal fiscal year 2025 in the amount of $104,453. The Criminal Justice Coordinating Council has approved the federal fiscal year 2025 Victims of Crime Act continuation funding applications submitted by the Prosecuting Attorneys Council of Georgia, PAC. The District Attorney's Office was selected to receive $83,562 in federal funds with base waived match funds in the amount of $20,891. Approved 4. Approve an easement to Georgia Power Company. Commissioner Nick Newkirk voiced strong opposition to Consent Agenda Item 4, which pertained to an easement but, in his view, was fundamentally connected to the ongoing Waterwells Agreement. Newkirk expressed his belief that the deal was unfavorable for Bullock County, arguing that it would ultimately burden taxpayers. He criticized the decision-making process, noting that the original agreement was determined by 8 individuals, 4 of whom are no longer affiliated with the county. Newkirk highlighted several key concerns, including changes to the original agreement that significantly reduced the county's potential profits. The initial deal was projected to secure water service until 2040 or 2049, but a recent agreement between the Joint Development Authority, JDA, and the Ogeechee Riverkeeper shortened the transition period to 2039, resulting in the loss of approximately 10 years of expected revenue. Additionally, Governor Kemp's announcement of a $502 million initiative to supply the region with 100 million gallons of water per day by 2030 further accelerates the timeline, cutting another 9 years from the county's original profit projections. According to Newkirk, these changes amount to a total loss of 19 years of anticipated revenue. He recalled that last year's projections estimated around $3 million in annual revenue from the deal, which would have totaled approximately $75 million over the original term. However, with the revised timelines, he estimated that potential earnings would drop to around $18 million, a significant reduction. Concluding his remarks, Newkirk reiterated his stance that the deal was flawed from the beginning and has only worsened with the recent developments. He expressed disappointment that the matter had not been put to a public referendum, asserting that the citizens of Bullock County should have had the opportunity to decide on such a critical issue. Newkirk firmly stated his intention to vote against the easement and any future matters related to the wells, emphasizing his commitment to protecting taxpayer interests. Motion passes 4-2. Approved 5. Approve and ratify the use of Sand Creek Land Construction for hauling services the week of January 13th through January 17th, 2025. Public Works had Sand Creek Land Construction hauling material for the week of January 13th to January 17th, at a cost of $16,590. Their services are aiding in the continued repairs using the Debbie Emergency Fund. Commissioner Toby Connor recused himself. Approved 6. Approve and ratify hauling services from J.L. Derisso Trucking from January 8th through January 17th, 2025. Public Works had J.L. Derisso Trucking hauling additional rock from Augusta and Warrenton pits to the BCPW yard during January 8th to January 17th, at a cost of $17,255. Their services are aiding in the continued repairs using the Debbie Emergency Fund. Approved 7. Approve a special event permit for Statesboro Ducks Unlimited to host a nonprofit event at Ogeechee Technical College, 20 Joe Kennedy Boulevard on February 27, 2025, from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m. 7. New business. Approved 1. Request permission to submit the Ogeechee JC Mental Health Court FY26 grant application $261,547. $222,315 state, $39,232 match, and breakdown. Judge Michael T. Muldrew presented a funding request for the Accountability Court, which uniquely combines both Drug Court and Mental Health Court into a single program. This consolidation helps maximize state funding efficiency by reducing administrative overhead, with only one coordinator and an assistant overseeing operations. Judge Muldrew explained that while the court submits a budget based on its actual needs, the state typically funds between 70% to 90% of the requested amount, with 80% being the average. The county is responsible for providing a matching portion, which has gradually increased from 10% when the program began 7 years ago to 15% currently. Despite this increase, the program is still considered a cost-effective investment due to its significant community impact. The Accountability Court currently serves an average of 50 to 60 participants, with numbers fluctuating between the Drug Court and Mental Health Court. Many participants qualify for both courts due to co-occurring disorders, substance abuse, and mental health issues. In such cases, individuals are typically enrolled in Drug Court while still receiving mental health services, which explains the higher number of Drug Court participants and the proportionately larger share of funding allocated to it. Key expenses for the program include surveillance and drug testing, which are crucial for ensuring participant accountability. The program employs county-funded deputies, not through the sheriff's department, who conduct random checks multiple times a week. Additionally, participants undergo frequent drug testing to monitor sobriety. The Accountability Court also utilizes state year-end funds to cover some operational costs, including an app that facilitates communication with participants, costing around $4,000 annually. The program has achieved a success rate of over 60%, significantly outperforming many other similar programs, where a 20% success rate is often considered exceptional. This success underscores the program's value in rehabilitating individuals and reducing recidivism. Judge Muldrew highlighted that the court serves the entire judicial circuit, which includes Bullock, Effingham, Jenkins, and Screven counties. Although Bullock County accounts for approximately 47% of the circuit's population, it contributes around 70% of the program's participants, providing a favorable return on investment. The county's financial match, estimated to be around $35,000, is determined based on population proportions. Judge Muldrew emphasized that while the current funding request is reflective of the program's needs, it's unlikely the full amount will be granted due to increasing competition for state funds. Commissioners were encouraged to reach out with any additional questions regarding the program and its funding structure. Approved 2. Requesting permission to submit the Ogeechee JC Drug Court FY26 grant application, draft, and breakdown $469,302, $398,908 state, $70,395 match. 8. Public comments. During the public comments portion of the Bullock County Board of Commissioners meeting, Marcus Toole addressed two key issues. First, representing Habitat for Humanity, Toole expressed support for the general concept of impact fees, noting that this position aligns with Habitat for Humanity International's broader stance. However, he emphasized the importance of Habitat being included in discussions as impact fees are developed locally. Toole highlighted that Habitat is a unique developer with a distinctive perspective, particularly regarding how such fees might affect the neighborhoods they serve. He requested that Habitat for Humanity be given a seat at the table during future impact fee discussions to ensure their concerns and insights are considered. Shifting to his role as a city taxpayer and property owner, Toole voiced concerns about the ongoing discussions between the City of Statesboro and Bullock County regarding the fire district. He criticized the proposed arrangement where Statesboro would continue providing automatic fire response services to areas outside city limits without receiving corresponding financial support from the county. Toole pointed out that this would effectively place the entire tax burden of funding costly fire services, such as deploying $3 million fire trucks, on Statesboro residents, despite the services benefiting county residents as well. He argued that if the county wishes to withdraw from the fire district, it should fully assume the responsibility of funding its own fire services. Toole suggested that the City of Statesboro should focus its resources on improving fire services within city limits, potentially achieving a Level 1 ISO rating, which would lower insurance premiums for city residents and help offset any new fire-related taxes. He stressed that it is unfair for city taxpayers, who already contribute to county taxes, to bear the additional cost of subsidizing fire protection for county residents. City taxpayers do not contribute directly to county fire coverage in the 5-mile district. There is an additional tax levied in the 5-mile district that goes to fire protection. Toole concluded by reminding the commissioners that approximately 40% of Bullock County's population resides within Statesboro. He emphasized that even renters indirectly pay property taxes and insurance through their rent, reinforcing his point that the current proposal would unfairly burden city residents. Toole urged both the city and county to reconsider the funding structure to ensure a more equitable distribution of fire service costs. Bill Emley expressed concerns regarding the county's decision to terminate its fire service agreement with the City of Statesboro. Emley began by highlighting the significant financial impact that changes in ISO ratings can have on property owners. He shared an example from a neighbor in Brooklet, whose fire insurance premiums dropped dramatically, from $7,305 to $2,998 annually, after the area's ISO rating improved. This, he noted, demonstrated the tangible benefits of maintaining strong fire protection services. Emley criticized the county's December 2024 decision to end the fire service agreement without a clear, publicly communicated plan to replace it. Drawing an analogy, he likened the decision to cutting a limb off a tree while sitting on it, pointing out that it reflected poor leadership and a lack of foresight. He questioned how the commissioners could justify dissolving such an essential agreement without having a comprehensive strategy in place to ensure continuous fire protection coverage, especially with the new fiscal year approaching on July 1. Referencing statements made by the interim county manager, Emley noted that deviations from the original fire service agreement had been acknowledged. He asked what actions, if any, had been taken to address these deviations and hold responsible parties accountable. Emley expressed frustration over the apparent lack of transparency and accountability, emphasizing that such issues should not have been allowed to persist unchecked. He also questioned the fairness of the financial arrangement between the county and the city of Statesboro. Emily sought clarification on whether the city had provided reciprocal funding for fire protection services it received from the county, suggesting that the arrangement seemed one-sided. Citing data from a local news story, Emily pointed out that Bullock County paid approximately $2.58 million in the 2024 fiscal year for around 400 fire service calls, averaging about $6,000 per call. He challenged the commissioners to explain how they plan to maintain or improve the current level of fire protection without this agreement, particularly in the 5-mile district surrounding Statesboro. Emily's central concern was that, without a solid plan and resources ready to deploy on July 1, the county risks jeopardizing public safety and causing insurance costs to skyrocket for many residents due to potential increases in ISO ratings. Emily concluded by urging the commissioners to reconsider the decision or, at the very least, provide clear answers and a concrete plan to ensure that residents are not left vulnerable once the current agreement expires. Matt Hollingsworth, owner of Hollingsworth Homes and president of the Statesboro Home Builders Association, addressed the Bullock County Board of Commissioners to share his insights on the potential implementation of impact fees. Drawing from his current experience serving on Bryan County's Impact Fee Committee, Hollingsworth provided his perspective, offering questions and considerations for the commissioners as they explore this option. He explained that impact fees are commonly used as a tool to offset the costs associated with new development, such as infrastructure improvements. Using Bryan County as an example, he noted that their impact fees, approximately $3,500 per building permit, are specifically allocated to transportation projects to maintain an acceptable level of service amid rapid growth, particularly in areas like Richmond Hill. Hollingsworth posed several key questions for the board to consider. First, he asked why Bullock County is considering impact fees and whether there has been a formal study to assess the need for them across the entire county. He emphasized the importance of identifying specific projects that would benefit from these funds, noting that having a clear list of projects is crucial to justify the fees. Additionally, he questioned the proposed $100,000 cost for a methodology report, asking whether this would cover all necessary analyses, including evaluations of the current levels of service and future capital planning. Concerns about fairness and equity were central to Hollingsworth's remarks. He questioned how a countywide impact fee could be applied fairly, especially if most development, and thus, most of the benefits, occurs in specific areas. For example, he asked why residents in less developed regions like Portal should pay the same fees as those in rapidly growing parts of the county. He also inquired whether impact fees would be the sole funding source for capital projects or if other revenue streams would be utilized. Hollingsworth highlighted the potential impact on housing affordability, noting that impact fees ultimately increase the cost of building permits. These costs are typically passed on to home buyers, which can deter development and affect the local housing market. Finally, he asked whether an independent impact fee committee had been formed to oversee the implementation process, suggesting that broad community input, especially from the development sector, would be essential. He concluded by stressing that while he wasn't advocating for or against impact fees, decisions should be based on clear evidence of need, fairness in application, and transparency about how the collected funds will be used. Commission and staff comments. Fire agreement termination. Bullock County Fire Chief Ben Tapley addressed the Board of Commissioners to clarify misconceptions circulating in the media regarding the county's fire protection plans, particularly in relation to the ongoing discussions with the City of Statesboro. Chief Tapley emphasized that the situation should not be viewed as a conflict between city and county fire departments, as both entities share the same goal of providing high-quality fire protection to all citizens. He highlighted the strong professional relationship between the departments, noting the mutual respect and cooperation that exist when responding to emergencies. Chief Tapley began by explaining the difference between automatic aid and mutual aid. Automatic aid, he said, refers to pre-arranged agreements where both the county and city automatically dispatch resources, typically one engine with personnel, to reported structure fires within each other's jurisdictions. This arrangement is reciprocal and carries no financial compensation for either party. In contrast, mutual aid is provided upon request, without a formal contract, when additional assistance is needed for large-scale incidents. He clarified that automatic aid currently applies only to reported structure fires, not all emergency calls. Addressing concerns about funding, Chief Tapley refuted claims of double taxation, explaining that Bullock County has no access to City of Statesboro funds, either in the general budget or capital expenditures. He stressed that the county's operations are fully funded by county resources, and there is no legal mechanism that allows county funds to be diverted from the city or vice versa. Chief Tapley provided an overview of the county's current fire protection resources, noting that the Bullock County Fire Department has 91 certified firefighters, including 48 volunteers, 31 full-time, and 12 part-time staff, with 3 more in training. In contrast, the City of Statesboro Fire Department employs 69 career and part-time firefighters. Tapley assured the public that the county has a comprehensive plan to maintain fire protection services in the 5-mile district after the termination of the current agreement with the city. This plan includes adding new fire stations in the district, which Statesboro has not done during its management of the area. The county plans to have 26 personnel on duty daily, with 2 engine companies, a ladder company, and a battalion chief dedicated to the district. Discussing insurance services office, ISO, ratings, which influence homeowners' insurance costs, Chief Tapley acknowledged that the city currently holds a Class 2 rating, while the county maintains a Class 4 quarters Y rating. He emphasized that the county is actively working to improve its ISO rating, including recent investments in additional firefighting equipment such as a new 3,000-gallon tanker. Chief Tapley also addressed the future of fire services beyond the current agreement. He stated that once the county assumes full responsibility for the 5-mile district, it will no longer be referred to as such but will simply be part of the Bullock County Fire Department's coverage area. He highlighted that the county's goal is to build a robust fire protection system that serves all residents equally. Importantly, he pointed out that the county will not inherit any personnel, equipment, or fire stations from the city after the agreement ends, meaning the county is starting from scratch in terms of infrastructure in the district. In response to Commissioner Newkirk's question regarding how he envisions this change, Chief Tapley explained that he hopes the transition will be gradual, beginning with the northern part of the district, around Highway 301 South and Highway 24, and expanding coverage over time. He clarified that while the county will be responsible for fire protection in these areas, the city may still provide support through automatic aid agreements, although the city has indicated that such agreements might be contingent on financial compensation. Tapley expressed his desire for continued cooperation, emphasizing that mutual support between the city and county fire departments is in the best interest of public safety. Click here to see detailed proposed 5-mile coverage map for Year 1. Bullock County Fire Proposed Fire Coverage Map. Chief Tapley concluded by reaffirming the county's commitment to providing high-quality fire protection services and to expanding emergency medical services, EMS, coverage. He offered to provide maps and additional information to the commissioners and the public to improve transparency and address any remaining concerns. Chief Tapley again addressed common misconceptions surrounding Bullock County's fire protection services, particularly concerning automatic aid and mutual aid. He clarified that automatic aid is an agreement where both the City of Statesboro and Bullock County automatically dispatch fire units simultaneously when there's a reported structure fire in either jurisdiction. This ensures an immediate response without the need for additional requests, enhancing efficiency and reducing response times. In contrast, mutual aid is activated only when an emergency exceeds the capacity of the initial responders, prompting a formal request for assistance from neighboring departments. Tapley emphasized that mutual aid is not optional, both the city and county are legally obligated to respond when called upon. He reassured residents that even if automatic aid agreements are not renewed, fire protection coverage will continue through mutual aid, dispelling fears that anyone will be left without fire services. Cassandra Mickel asked about call volumes, specifically how many calls are handled within the city limits compared to the 5-mile fire district. In response, Tapley provided estimates based on the most recent data. He explained that the Statesboro Fire Department responds to approximately 1,500 calls annually, with about 400 of those calls occurring within the 5-mile district and the remaining 1,100 calls within the city limits. Tapley acknowledged that these numbers may fluctuate slightly but provided them to give a general understanding of the workload distribution. This data prompted further discussion among commissioners about the fairness of the current funding arrangement. The county currently contributes around 30% of the city's fire budget to support fire services in the 5-mile district. Some commissioners questioned whether this contribution proportionally reflects the volume of calls and services provided. Tapley argued that while the numbers might suggest a certain balance, the county's investment should also be viewed with long-term benefits in mind. Developing county-operated fire stations and infrastructure will ultimately provide greater returns by reducing reliance on city resources and improving countywide emergency response capabilities. Tapley concluded by emphasizing that Bullock County's goal is to build a robust, countywide fire department capable of delivering consistent, high-quality service to all residents, regardless of changes to current agreements with the City of Statesboro. Well Mitigation Committee. Interim County Manager Cindy Steinman provided an update regarding the Mitigation Committee applications. She presented a summary sheet to the commissioners, noting the extensive information included due to the large number of applicants. Steinman announced that since their last meeting, the county had received one additional application, bringing the total number of applications to 18. She reminded the commissioners that while the current mitigation plan recommends appointing 3 members, Bryan County had opted to appoint an additional alternate member to serve as a backup in case a primary member is unable to continue. Steinman suggested that adopting a similar approach for Bullock County might be beneficial to ensure continuity within the committee. Steinman concluded her remarks by requesting feedback from the commissioners on how they would like to proceed with the selection process, emphasizing the importance of having clear direction to move forward efficiently. Commissioner Toby Connor addressed the issue of the Mitigation Committee applications, noting that he had received several calls from residents across the county who were experiencing difficulties with the application website, such as issues with accessing the correct section. Connor mentioned that he had received 3 or 4 calls specifically regarding these concerns. Given these challenges, he suggested that the county extend the application deadline by another week to allow more time for individuals facing technical difficulties to submit their applications. Connor believed that this extension would be beneficial for both the county and potential applicants, ensuring that everyone interested had a fair opportunity to participate. He also recommended that applicants be given the option to submit their applications in person to further accommodate those struggling with the online process. Commissioner Anthony Simmons added a suggestion that they should pick people from different parts of the county, and not just one side. Interim County Manager Cindy Steinman responded to Commissioner Toby Connor's suggestion about the Mitigation Committee applications, stating that she will reopen the application process for one more week to ensure more people can apply. She encouraged anyone experiencing technical difficulties to contact her directly for assistance. However, if she is unavailable, she noted that Venus Mincy White can also pass along any messages to her. Steinman also reminded the commissioners that she had sent them an email earlier in the day regarding an upcoming work session scheduled for February 18, immediately following the regular meeting. She has invited both the water engineer and the water consultant to attend this session to provide an overview of the county's water projects, including details on past progress, the current status, and key decisions that will need to be made going forward. She mentioned that if the commissioners choose to keep the applications open for another week, the timing would work well, as they would gain valuable insights from the water consultants that could help inform decisions related to the Mitigation Committee. Budget meetings. Finance Director Christy King addressed the commissioners, reminding them about an email she sent a few weeks ago outlining the county's strategic initiatives that have been used in the budget process over the past few years. She noted that she hadn't received any feedback yet and encouraged commissioners to respond to her email or call her within the next week to share any suggested changes or budget priorities. King emphasized the importance of this input as the county prepares to kick off the budget process. In addition, King mentioned that the county has tentatively reserved the Bishop Building at Georgia Southern University for the upcoming budget retreat, as it has proven to be an effective venue in previous years. The proposed dates are Monday, March 17, with the option to extend into Tuesday afternoon following the regular commission meeting, and Wednesday morning if needed. She asked the commissioners to confirm their availability and preferences so that the retreat schedule can be finalized and all necessary arrangements can be made. Interim County Manager Cindy Steinman added to Christy King's update, emphasizing the need to confirm the reservation for the Bishop Building at Georgia Southern University as soon as possible. She noted that the facility is in high demand during Georgia Southern's spring break week, but the county is fortunate to use it free of charge, which is greatly appreciated. Steinman explained that for those unfamiliar with the process, the budget retreat typically spans one full day and a half day, with the possibility of extending slightly beyond that if needed. She outlined the tentative schedule, suggesting an all-day session on Monday, March 17, followed by the regular commission meeting on Tuesday morning, March 18, and then concluding the retreat later that day. Steinman stressed the importance of quickly deciding whether the commissioners wanted to proceed with this plan. After brief discussion, there was a general consensus among the commissioners to proceed with the proposed dates, and the schedule for March 17 and 18 was confirmed for the budget retreat. Town Hall. Commissioner Nick Newkirk announced that he has finalized plans for an upcoming town hall meeting scheduled for Tuesday, February 25, from 6 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. at the Louetta Moore Park. The event will be open to the public, providing an opportunity for residents to discuss a range of topics, including potential discussions on fire services, water issues, or any other community concerns. Newkirk extended an invitation to all commissioners to attend and mentioned that additional details would be provided as the date approaches. Chairman comments on public comment opportunities. Chairman David Bennett announced that following the next county commission meeting on February 18, there will be an open meeting featuring water consultants who will provide a comprehensive presentation on issues related to wells and water management. Bennett emphasized that public questions will not be permitted during this meeting to allow the consultants to present all relevant information without interruptions. The goal is for both the commissioners and the public to process and digest the details together. To ensure public input, Bennett confirmed that a town hall meeting will be held the following week on February 25 at the Louetta Moore Park Center from 6 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. This event will offer residents the opportunity to ask questions and engage in discussions based on the information presented during the February 18 meeting. Bennett also expressed his intention to invite the water consultants to return for the town hall to address any follow-up questions. When asked if EPD, Environmental Protection Division, representatives would attend the February 18 meeting, Bennett clarified that the session will focus solely on the county's paid water consultants, who are working directly on Bullock County's water mitigation plan. He explained that the consultants were hired specifically to serve the county's interests, providing guidance on the best path forward for water management. Debris cleanup. Assistant Director of Public Works Robert Siemens provided an update on Bullock County's storm debris cleanup efforts, reporting that the county is approximately 75% complete with the process. Currently, 24 haulers are actively working daily to remove debris. Initially, the county projected around 250,000 cubic yards of debris, but as of today, they have collected 259,965 cubic yards and expect to exceed 300,000 cubic yards before completion. In addition, crews have removed 29,769 hazardous leaners, or hangers, which posed risks to public safety. Siemens noted that debris at the county's laydown sites has already been mulched during the first round, with more still to be processed. So far, 14,700 cubic yards of mulch, equivalent to about 138 tractor-trailer loads, have been hauled out. Crews continue to identify areas needing attention, such as a section along Pulaski Highway, and they promptly add these locations to the contractors' lists for cleanup. Siemens emphasized that residents can report missed areas, and the county will ensure they are addressed. Commissioners expressed appreciation for the public works staff's hard work, acknowledging the challenges faced when coordinating with agencies like FEMA. When asked about meeting the 180-day FEMA deadline, Siemens stated that while they are approaching the 120-day mark, they have secured an extension for the 180-day period if needed. This flexibility is critical, given the remaining debris still to be cleared. Commissioners also discussed plans to issue public announcements via the county website and social media as they near the final cleanup push. Residents will be encouraged to place any remaining storm-related debris at the roadside before the final collection period. Siemens stressed that this cleanup is strictly for storm-related debris, not for regular yard waste, and residents should act promptly to avoid missing the final collection window. In response to a question about debris on private property adjacent to dirt roads, Siemens clarified that the county will collect debris if it is storm-related and has been moved to the right-of-way. However, the county will not enter private property to retrieve debris. For residents in rural areas, Siemens recommended cutting large fallen trees and moving them to the roadside for pickup. Chairman closing remarks. Chairman David Bennett closed the Bullitt County Board of Commissioners meeting with heartfelt remarks, beginning with an apology regarding his missing photo on the county website. He explained that the delay was his fault, not the website manager's, Dahl Kennedy, joking that the two look somewhat alike and that he'd even considered having Kennedy attend meetings in his place. Bennett humorously mentioned that his wife had selected his official photo, but he'd been too busy to submit it along with his brief biography. He assured everyone that it would be updated soon, asking for patience and grace toward the website team. Shifting to a more serious tone, Bennett acknowledged the hard work of the commissioners, especially regarding the ongoing fire protection discussions, which have generated considerable public concern. He expressed his appreciation for community engagement, stating that he's always willing to listen, answer questions, and even accept criticism. However, he asked that after any heated conversations, residents offer a prayer for the commissioners, to grant them the wisdom to make the right decisions for Bullitt County. Bennett addressed the anxieties of those living within the 5-mile fire district, reassuring them that they will not be left without fire protection regardless of the outcome of current negotiations. He also reminded the public that while much focus has been on the 5-mile district, there are other areas in the county without adequate fire coverage, and the board is committed to improving services countywide. Reflecting on the county's growth and changes over the past 15 years, Bennett acknowledged that decisions made in the past, before his tenure, cannot be changed. However, he emphasized his dedication to shaping a better future. The board has presented a plan and remains open to feedback and constructive dialogue, with the goal of ensuring all residents receive the protection they deserve. Bennett spoke about the oaths he's taken in his life, to his wife, to defend the nation, and to serve and protect Bullitt County. He assured attendees that these commitments are deeply meaningful to him and that he, along with the other commissioners, will continue working in the best interest of the community. He encouraged residents to trust the process and to have faith that the board is striving to do the right thing. Concluding his remarks, Bennett invited anyone with lingering questions to stay after the meeting, offering to explain matters in detail if needed. He then called for a motion to adjourn, which was promptly seconded, and the meeting was officially adjourned. Adjourn.